Fab, got it to work. Sorry, folks, hate it when they kind of change the dashboard and you're like, oh, will this work? Anyway, really nice to see you all. Welcome to our second Module 6 call. After this week, we're going to have an integration week for a week, so there'll be no new module. I think we might release it actually on Thursday, but we won't be doing anything with it for a little bit. So you've got a whole week to chill out, relax, read some stuff, step right away from all of this learning business. Totally what makes life easy for you. All right, let me share my screen. Got a couple of bits to share with you today. So today we'll do our usual check-in from Practice Pods. Hey Lisa, nice to see you. We'll revisit the aims of this module. And today we're going to get into the kind of muck and bullets of coaching with the protector, right? So last week was a bit more of a kind of theory and sharing this model with you all. And today I want to get into like, how do I actually work with a client around their protector? What questions to ask, and in particular, the kind of main ways that we would coach with this to bring in the healthy adult self. And I knew, you know, we're starting to get to know that aspect of the psyche. As we move into the rest of the program, we're really going to dive deeply into that. So we'll bring the healthy adult self in, and we'll talk about protector-specific experiments. Okay, so each protector has its own kind of suite of experiments that you want to play with. I'm going to coach somebody today. We're going to do a bit of self-reflection and we'll do some peers work as well. So really interactive. Hope you brought some energy. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Okay, so just to check in with folks, how have your practice pods been going? Have you got any questions that have come up? What's going on? Tell me everything. Hey Fiona,
we've had some meetings.
Yay, that's fantastic.
That's our main update.
Good.
We haven't managed to all get together, like all three of us, but we've had some meetings. So
okay, yeah. cool. And I'm curious to know, like, as like last week we started playing with this concept of the protector. I'm curious to know for everyone, and maybe you want to speak to this as well, Fiona. Like, how is that influencing how you kind of conceive of self-doubt?
I had this moment this morning where I was like, I feel like my healthy adult self is like holding a flashlight.
Yeah.
And just like rummaging around in there being like, oh, who are you? What's this about? And yeah, I feel like that's kind of, that's the vibe I've got at the moment. Like, actually, it's that my healthy adult self has this like extra tool in the toolkit to be like, right, well, something weird's going on here. What's that about? And kind of, so for kind of my own self-doubt, it's really helpful. And I know we'll get to that in the next module. In terms of with clients, I'm maybe not quite there yet. Like, I'm still quite in sort of module 4 and 5 kind of content place with that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I love that image of your healthy adult self shining a little flashlight on stuff. Yeah, it's a great way, a really compassionate way of thinking about this work. That every time we're like, oh, is this self-doubt? What's going on? You're actually starting to think of, oh, there's a part of me that wants me to see something that's going on here. Yeah, I always say that some of my favorite emotions to kind of become aware of are resentment, sadness, and anger, because I've learned to see that they're always showing me something isn't right here. Have a little look at it. It can be exactly that feeling of, I just want to poke about here. So.
And there was something that came up last week for me in the critic. So I have lots of fun with the critic, or the critic has lots of fun with me, I'm not sure. But you said the critic is often all about overworking so you don't have to feel. So whenever I find myself in this kind of churn, 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 do, 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 I'm like, what is it I'm not feeling? What do I need to feel right now? And that's been so helpful, just as a real quick way in. Perfect. To kind of interrupt the cycle.
Yep. I think that's what I've found as well, is that as you start to kind of allow this information and this way of thinking about our experience as humans to sort of filter through, what tends to come out is these very distilled questions that just bring you back to stuff. What's this protecting me from? What am I doing here? What's going on? What am I feeling? Right, these quite simple questions that actually just give us that doorway into what is our experience, right? What's happening in the here and now? What's that connected to? Yeah, it's incredibly powerful, because I've got a little bracelet now and it just says life is now, life is now, life is now, life is now, like all at a circle. And that's the reminder for me, is that actually, I know the philosophers have been telling us this for centuries, but we only really have right now. And if we can start making tiny choices that feel much more aligned to our healthy adult selves right now, over time, that creates the life we want. And I think we want it to be way more complicated than that. You know, and it is. Like, that's a deceptively simple way of talking about this work. But there's something about that coming back to right now. How can I distill my experience, see what is actually happening, play with this, make a choice from something that feels good to me? And over time, what does that create? Yeah. Cool, right?
Super cool.
Okay, thanks Fiona, that's brilliant.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to share anything that's come up in practice pods, anything you're contemplating? Yeah, Rowena.
Hey, can you hear me?
Can.
Cool. Yeah, just a few things really. That in our practice pods we've started to, hi Iris, we've still got our kind of weekly kind of three of us meeting together, but we've now sort of established one-on-one coaching sessions through the week so that we can kind of continue following through the threads that we've started. And this is only sort of really the first week of this, but it's just a really interesting development, I suppose. And yeah, so really enjoying that. And the other thing I was going to say about thinking about the sort of the faces of the protector is that I've found it takes the sting out of the presence of, you know, it's got a little cartoon character attached to it now almost in my mind. So it's kind of, oh, it's fine. Oh, it's just you. Don't worry about it. You know?
Oh, great.
And that's quite nice.
I think that's the thing that I've found is so helpful in this, and I'm informed by internal family systems therapy, which I'm trained in as part of this, in that we start to see that, oh, I have a part of me, it's not all of me, but I have a part of me that is responding in this way.
Yeah.
Because that feels safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we just remove the judgment of this self-sabotage idea that so many of us have been indoctrinated into.
Totally.
Just completely let go of that judgment.
Yeah it's hilarious though, because I saw it sort of my bystander protector showing up. I was telling people in my practice pod about this. I just wanted to buy some concert tickets, and I just left my window open on the sort of buying page in my laptop for like a month. I was like, what are you doing? Buy the tickets. Bystander. Done. Yeah. Easy. But, nice. You know, it's funny where it shows up, right?
Yeah. So funny. Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant. And I love the way you phrase that. My bystander did this. Like, I think that is a really great thing just to notice in clients. They may want to use the protectors as a way to describe their personality. And we always want to catch that and say, This is about your response to self-doubt. Mm-hmm. It's a protective pattern. It's not mm-hmm. who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I love that you are doing that unconsciously for yourself now.
Yeah, completely unintentional, but yeah.
Love it. Love it. Really cool. Great stuff, folks. Okay, so let's move into really working with this protector business. I just want to just really kind of come back to what we are talking about here. Our protectors are the combination of our beliefs, our behaviors, how they form patterns, how that feels safer than doing the thing that self-doubt is warning us about. Right, our protective beliefs, behaviors, and the patterns they form always feel safer than doing the thing that we have self-doubt about, even if it's in direct opposition to what we actually want. So it defies logic. It's not about logic. It's not about common sense, right? It's not about what we intellectually know. It's a survival instinct, right? I will only be safe I'll be safer if I do this or if I don't do that. And we want to help our clients to name this because as we can expand their awareness of how self-doubt is trying to protect them, then it's like, oh, I know what I'm dealing with. You get into the place that Rowena and Fiona are describing. Oh, I'm spotting this pattern. I can see it for what it is. I'm shining a light on it. And then I can interrupt it. Then I can make more conscious choices. Then I can take an action from the here and now, knowing that I'll probably be okay. And this is how we interrupt that kind of pattern that comes up on the other side of the self-doubt loop where, oh, this is just who I am. I'm the person who doesn't book concert tickets, right? We kind of interrupt that pattern. Now I'm a person who goes to concerts. Amazing, right? And it's like sometimes, and this is the thing that I'm always a bit stunned by, it can literally take one or two experiences for us to shift a pattern that has been really kind of has a grip on us and our clients. So this is why experiments are really important, because when we have recent real life, like tangible evidence that pattern has some chinks in it, right? I've been to a concert, so I can't now say in all honesty to myself in my quiet moments that I'm a person who always misses out on concert tickets because I procrastinate. That isn't me anymore, right? So this is how we change that, oh, this is how I always am, this is just what I do, kind of experience of this, yeah? So I just want to revisit quickly the faces of the protector. We're going to spend a little bit of time just revisiting the kinds of experiments that we look at with each of these different protector patterns. And then we're going to do a bit of an exercise to kind of bring this to life, how you might work with a client, okay? So here are our four protectors: the critic, the martyr, the scapegoat, and the bystander. They are shadows of their corresponding healthy self-resource. So self-belief for the critic, self-acceptance for the martyr, self-worth for the scapegoat, and self-trust for the bystander, right? So our first one is the critic, and what we want to do here is encourage our clients to experiment with compassion and imperfection, right? So remember, the critic is all about being perfect. You can't do enough, you can't be enough, you can't work hard enough to kind of feel okay. So some ideas for this, and I really want you to go to town on this, be as creative as you like. But here's some ones that I found really helpful. Encouraging your clients to speak to themselves with compassion 100% of the time for a set period of time, 24 hours or 48 hours. And whenever you find yourself criticizing or judging or bullying, you apologize to yourself and you start again, right? And the reason we want them to do this is because we're noticing how we talk to ourselves, the voice in our heads, the voice that we use to speak to ourselves, if that is always really judgy and telling us we're doing something wrong, finding fault in what we're doing, that could stand some compassion, some tolerance for imperfection. I always think that people who are quite criticizy and judgy, a bit bullyish, must have that going all the time because it's so normal for them. They just project it out into the world. So, and the reason for this, all of these experiments is we're noticing what comes up. The client's experience is the experiment, not whether or not they speak to themselves 100% of the time with compassion. Yeah. So we're taking away the pass-fail criteria. An experiment is literally to try something new and see what happens. Another one, especially if you've got parents that are complete perfectionists and believe that parenting is a vehicle for their perfection, let the kids plan a whole weekend, right? Like literally, and I have seen real type A kind of folks do this and fall apart on a Saturday morning and then regroup by Saturday afternoon and kind of go with it, right? And by Sunday they're like, what's the worst that could happen, you know? And then there's paint on the walls and all sorts of shit happens. But the idea, right, is that they're letting go of control, letting go of the need to always be working, be tidying up, cleaning up, getting everything right. You know those folks. Do some things that you can't get right from the start. Learning an instrument, learning a craft, changing some habits like leaving dishes in the sink overnight or stop wearing makeup for a week. Like, however their perfectionism kind of shows up, just say, well, just try that, see what happens. Do it in a, like, negotiate the experiment with some humor and compassion for your client, right? So the idea is that you're letting them try something new to see what might happen. And thirdly, anything where the client's overworking, get really specific for them, right? So what I've done this with clients who, overwork to the point where, they're never off their phones. And we've just come up with, okay, let's start at 8 o'clock at night. That's your cutoff time. Now, for those of us who, have ever had anything to do with HR, we're like 5:30 is the max, right? But if for someone who's got their phone on 24/7, starting at 8 o'clock and working backwards is a great experiment. What we just want to see is what actually happens when they do this, right? What are the consequences? Can they tolerate those? Can they live with them? Can they manage around them? How do they feel as a result of making those changes? Yeah. And this is the reason. The client cannot do enough, cannot work hard enough, cannot be perfect enough for this critic to feel safe. There is always going to be more. It's not actually about feeling safe because there's always going to be, a new thing to worry about, a new thing to perfect about. So it's not about fixing that feeling of safety with the critic. We actually have to do it with the healthy self, which is to do something new. Anyone who's got a critic, I highly encourage you to play with this. See what happens. See what it feels like. Take the results to your practice pods. Allow yourself to be known in this way. It can be a really vulnerable, crunchy, fast healing when you realize, I can turn my phone off at 6 o'clock and I don't have to think about work. Yeah, Iris.
I have a question about that, that last sentence, like the critic can't feel safe. Like it does make sense to me. It will always be worried about something. Yeah. Is this different to the others? Will they not be worried about something? And then the follow-up question is, like, if the critic can never feel safe, then how do we make it safe enough so the client can do this?
Great question. So yes, all of the protectors have a safety mechanism that they're trying to protect us, mm-hmm. to create that, but it's a false idea, mm-hmm. right? Because the critic's saying, I have to protect you from all of these things. You have to keep working so that you'll feel safe, but you're never going to feel safe. You mm-hmm. can't do enough to feel safe. So we want to experiment in a way that allows the client to not necessarily feel safe, but be able to take steps forward with a tolerable level of discomfort so that mm-hmm. they can build some courage and resilience and go, oh, actually, I was making up an idea of what might happen and I had no way of knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that these protectors are there is because the sense of alarm that self-doubt creates, right? I've got to hold myself back or something bad will happen. Now, the thing to really know, and I think this is such a great question, is that self-doubt is not a predictor of risk. It's just an alarm that goes off when there might be a risk. So mm-hmm. Nothing can tell the future. It does not know the probability of risk, and it does not know what the consequences of that risk will be. It just says, danger, Will Robinson, and then we hold ourselves back, right?
Okay.
So the thing to know when you're setting these experiments with the client is you want to negotiate around something that feels the least amount of resistance.
Okay. So something that they're willing to do. Yeah.
Right. So you'll notice like these, some of these are low risk. They have very few consequences, right? It's speaking to yourself with compassion for 24 hours. Right. It's like you can try that out.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to coddle our clients either, right? We don't want to say, oh, that's going to be so hard for you. I'm so sorry. Because that's mm-hmm. us colluding with their protector.
Mm-hmm.
We want to say things like, you try it out. Speak to yourself kindly. You've got this idea, and this is what will happen with a critic. You've got this idea that if no one's keeping you on your edge, right, that you're going to kind of lose your advantage. Mm-hmm. If you aren't beating yourself up, then you'll go soft.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, we don't know that might happen. Maybe you'll be just as driven and just as ambitious, but you'll be nicer to yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, imagine that. And you can still motivate yourself and encourage yourself without bullying yourself. What might that look like? Right? So it's all about staying with these low-risk experiments to see what actually happens. Because as they build evidence that they actually can do way more than what their protector is trying mm-hmm. to keep them, hold them back from, then their self-belief is going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense, Iris?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And actually what you just said about the critic with the critic feeling like they almost like need to be harsh to themselves all the time so they can get it done. Like that makes so much sense to me because I think that's a good chunk of my clients works like that. Like they get their productivity done by yelling at themselves.
Right? So
that really helped to like be like, oh, what's the difference between the critic and some of the others. And then also it sounds like the protectors can't ever feel safe because there will always be something to worry about, but the person can still feel safe in knowing that they can tolerate the discomfort and it won't be so bad, or they can kind of still be happy and still be okay. Like that is where the safety is, in almost like that self-belief being built.
That's exactly it. We want to shift this false feeling of safety, mm. all the things I have to protect myself from, to a much more healthy adult self version of safety, which is mm-hmm. whatever happens, I've got my own back.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, I can treat myself with respect. I can hold myself in a way that reflects my values.
Yeah.
You've got
awesome.
It.
Thank you.
Nice, Iris. I love the way you're thinking about your clients as well. God, all of my clients are bullies to themselves. You might reuse this experiment again and again and again. Could become like a freebie that you give away to clients as they start to work with you, right? Like it's, you know, you're starting to think about how am I showing up for my people in a way that can really help them make steps forward. Perfect.
Awesome.
Yeah, love it. Nicola, in the dark. somewhere in the depths, the depths of the hemisphere.
Well, just to sort of segue with that, I was just curious, Sass, in our pod, we did one little playing with experiments. And we sort of, you know, sometimes you kind of run out of time and like, but what I was curious was we were working with someone and it was kind of with a dominant face of a critic in the moment. And then we started exploring this idea of like the control, like just digging around the illusion of control. And I would describe it almost like, maybe almost like the protector feeling a bit disarmed, like almost like a recognition that like, oh, this doesn't even guarantee me like this strategy. If only I can do X perfectly because it's premised on the belief, then I'll get X result, which isn't all within their control actually. And so just playing with that, but it was almost like a, like then the protector going shit. Like not, it wasn't like that, but that's sort of the feeling. And I even noticed another binary arose because it was like there was a recognition that's true. It won't actually guarantee it. And then there was almost a binary, like, what's the point then? Like, and like, where does that even leave me? Like almost like a binary. So why bother? But it's almost like we didn't have enough time. And I almost felt ill-equipped. Like it wasn't like there's this neat bullet, healthy adult self. Great. Like, but it felt like a moment. And I could, I'm just curious over time, if you're like, how, what do you do with those moments? I don't know. I just felt a bit out of my own depth. Like I felt like it was sort of powerful, but I didn't quite know what to do with it.
Yeah. This happens a lot, right? Because what we're actually doing in this work is, and you'll see this in these first, you know, half of the modules, is we are gently and compassionately saying, all the ways you're keeping yourself safe that aren't working for you were never designed to work for you. Mm-hmm. And there is a different way you can do this that will actually give you a true sense of safety. It's not always going to feel comfortable, but it will give you a true sense of safety, right? That feeling that I've got my own back, right? And so in those moments where, and this always happens, right? The last 5 minutes of a coaching session, I think, are often the most important. So sometimes I'll be like, can we get to that first? So I think sometimes you're not ever going to tie them up in a nice, neat bow, mm-hmm. right? And so what you can say to, sometimes what I'll say to a client is, look, I don't want to leave this here. Have you got 5 extra minutes that we can just cover this off in a way that helps you feel okay? Mm-hmm. Right. So just kind of take the extra time. And in that time, I would be saying things like, it's totally understandable to feel like this, because what we're actually doing is saying that you're just highlighting something that has always been true. Right. That actually this doesn't guarantee you some safety. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's totally understandable that you would have this because our whole culture is built on this. Right. Cling to certainty. Right. But it's like, but there, what our work is about is helping you to create an internal sense of safety that is based on your healthiest, most resourced mm-hmm. self. Mm-hmm. Right. And I want you to, you know, I would always give the client something to contemplate between sessions. I want you to think about when you have felt like that in your life, right? Yeah. Like just invite that to come to you, maybe on a walk, maybe when you're doing the dishes. You know, that just think about those moments in your life where you have felt that sense of, I kind of know what I'm doing here, or this feels good to me. Like, where have the moments of pride and joy been in your life? Right. Mm-hmm. So you're actually asking the client to recognize that they already have a healthy adult self.
Mm-hmm. And Sass, is it also common though that sometimes if it's almost like feels a little bit too much, like that it's not like this clean linear thing, like a little bit of a dance of almost like touch into that and then a bit of a retreat? Like, and I can't presume what happened, but I'm just thinking energetically, like, do you observe that sometimes? It's almost
all the time. Yeah. I always think it's a bit more like a Lord of the Rings saga. You know, there be dragons, there's mountains, right? Yeah. There are odd creatures that will show up from time to time and confuse the shit out of you. Like, this is, and this is the thing, is whoever told us that it was going to be a nice, simple walk in the park?
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. You've been doing it. You've been doing life without this knowledge for a long time. Now we're shining a light on it. This is the courage. This is the courageous work.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Always remember, your client's healthy adult self brought them to coaching. That's how you know they've already got access to that part. They're willing to ask for help, be known, be vulnerable. Amazing. Nice, great questions, guys. Okay, let's move to the next protector. Get through these. Okay, so the martyr. We want to experiment with acknowledging emotions and prioritizing needs. Right, so remember, the martyr, their fundamental belief is I have to be needed. That's where my sense of safety comes from, if I'm needed. So I'm going to overgive and self-sacrifice and put my needs last, or certainly far down the line. And my basic way of being in the world is I don't matter as much as you. Right. So what we're doing with the martyr is saying, well, let's just experiment with acknowledging that you have some emotions and prioritizing your needs. Right. And so one of the things that I'll encourage people to do, practice saying no when you don't want to do something. Practice honesty with other people. If that feels too far, practice honesty with yourself. Just acknowledge for yourself, I don't want to do this. Right? So you take it down to whatever feels doable for the client. Some people will be like, yeah, I'm really ready to stop saying yes to everything my mother asks me to do. I'm really ready for that. For other people, it's like, that is the worst thing I could do as a daughter. So it's like, okay, so your experiment then is to practice saying no for yourself. I want you just to keep telling yourself the truth. Even if you're acknowledging your emotions and prioritizing your needs with yourself, that totally counts, right? And as the data from these experiments starts to come in, we can then start to work with the beliefs that are coming up. Experimenting will take on more courageous forms as the client becomes more willing to try new things. Yeah. Auditing each time they dismiss their own emotions or sacrifice their needs for someone else. Right? Just keeping a record of that. What's the risk they're protecting themselves from? I did this experiment with a guy who was an auditor in a financial services company. He was like, now you're speaking my language. and he just couldn't delegate anything. He was working so hard to take care of everybody else and, of course, dismissed his own needs, dismissed his own emotions, self-sacrificing all over the place. And so I said, right, I want you to audit yourself. He made a spreadsheet. It was a beautiful thing. And we found that actually he was doing this, many times a day in quite subtle ways. He had color codes. It was really fun. But he was able to have a little bit of a sense of humor about it, which I think is the key here, right? Is to just say, oh man, look at what I'm doing. And then this gives us information that's up to date, that's real, it's based in their life right now, rather than just a story that they're making up. And then we start to play with, what's the risk here? Right? What does that look like? Take it into a belief buster. Take it into a belief biography. Just make some connections for the client. Another one is to claim some regular time and space for themselves, for something they enjoy, and notice what comes up. Right? So saying to someone, okay, so you've got it in your mind, right, that if you have a morning routine, everything's going to change. So let's create that for you. All right, experiment with spending 10 minutes each morning on your own, doing your own thing. What comes up when you do that? if you commit to doing that for a week, 2 weeks, there is going to be a time during that experience where probably a small human or a big human is going to ask you to compromise that time, because you've always done that in the past. So we'll notice what that's like when you have to compromise that, right? What happens when you limit the time spending tasks you don't enjoy, right? These are just experiments with acknowledging that you have emotions, prioritizing your needs, right? Because the healthy adult self, when it's in self-acceptance, is like, yep, I am literally a constellation of emotions and needs. And the more that tolerance I can have for being with all of these, the more I can belong to myself, the more I can connect with others in a really genuine way, right? And the thing to know, again, you know, creating an experiment around where the client is specifically overgiving, but the thing to know is the client cannot give enough for this martyr pattern to feel safe. It's a false sense of safety. Everyone kind of getting into it with that, yeah? Okay, so I'm just going to zip through the scapegoat and the bystander. Ideas for experimenting with keeping promises and taking responsibility. Key for the scapegoat. Scapegoats, it's too hard. Don't try. I'm overwhelmed. No one even knows how hard it is for me. Right? So it kind of turns turtle. So the way I work with a scapegoat is to make a decision about what the client wants to do in the session and encourage them to keep this promise to themselves. Right? So something like, I'm always late, right? It's too hard for me to be organized. Becomes, I'm always going to be 5 minutes early. I'm going to be 5 minutes early to everything this week and see what happens. When the client brings that to life, when they try and keep that promise to themselves. Remember, the goal isn't to be 5 minutes early. The goal is to make that promise and see what comes up when they try and keep it. Right, it's all about taking responsibility when it comes to the scapegoat. What happens? Because it's the information that they gather from their real life that will inform the next session. I would also offer, like, resistance is usually highest for the scapegoat, for folks with a really strong scapegoat, because everything is too hard, right? And then you're asking them to do an experiment. So we want to encourage really doable steps. Spend a session just planning their promise they're going to keep, right? Try and anticipate what could go wrong. Get them to say, what will I do if that happens? Because we want to play out the worst case scenario where it is, you know, in their minds too hard to do anything. Right, so you spend a session going, okay, well then what would you do if that happened? Right, you're not coming up with answers for them, you're helping them to see, I know what I would do. Here we go, anticipating setbacks. So building a plan, right, what could go wrong, what choices do you have, what will you do? Right, so you're helping the client to kind of anticipate what is going to overwhelm them, because that's the kind of key experience of the scapegoat. Yeah. And I would also add in there, like, what are they going to do for fun, right? Because the scapegoat can get because this is my predominant one that comes up when I'm in that under-functioning mode. Actually getting into like really healthy ways to support yourself. You know, are you getting enough sleep? Are you well nourished? Are you hanging out with some friends? Are you doing things for fun? Are you moving your body, right? All these, the basics of taking care of yourself, really important for a scapegoat. And this is the thing to note, the client cannot quit enough for the scapegoat to feel safe. If they say, it's too hard, I'm out, adulting is just beyond me, right? Even when they quit, they're still telling themselves that story. That's still the belief that they are working from. So they're never going to feel safe in that pattern. Make sense? Any questions coming up for folks? You all good? All right. And for our lovely friend, the bystander, we want to experiment with making decisions and taking action. Right? Bystander is all, I've got to wait because I don't know enough. So they get stuck in overthinking. They get stuck just staying where they are, bystanding their own life. They can get stuck in overthinking from a fantasy perspective, right? If only I knew how to do this, or I knew the answer to that, or I could do this, then magically it would all be fine, right? So we want them to make decisions and take action, really feel resourced. So, and again, for these two underfunctioners, the scapegoat and the bystander, it's a really good idea to do a lot of planning in the session with them. So I'll invite a client to commit to some doable action, right? Notice if they make that really complicated, then there'll be lots of things to think about, right? So you want a doable action, something they can do, either one thing that they're doing repeatedly or something that they're creating that can be done within a certain time frame. Bring the bystander in. What is the bystander worried about? Let it have a say. Again, anticipate the setbacks. So this will show up for a bystander where they feel confused. I'm confused. I don't know what I would do. So we want to help them to trust that they can make choices, they can make decisions. What will they do when they get confused? What's confusing about this? That's why you want it to be a doable action, not something with a big old story attached to it. Anything with sub-plans, right? Sub-plans, multiple spreadsheets, anything that where the plan is the activity is too big, right? Because this is how bystanders operate. I'm going to have the best plan. It's going to be so beautiful. I'm going to overthink the shit out of the plan. They're the ones that whenever I say bought a new planner, they're the 50 people that send me a DM going, oh my God, where did you get your planner? And I'm like, for fuck's sake, do you want me to Google this? Anyway, okay, so the bystander is often concerned with looking foolish, right? So it can really help to experiment with something that is creative, is fun, that you kind of can't be good at, you know? Dancing, play, creative pursuits, anything where the client is able to be in the moment can really help free up that bystander. They tend to take themselves quite seriously, which is why when you say, would you like me to Google that? They get offended that you would even suggest such a thing, right? So it's all about just encouraging that bystander to relax and take some steps, right? I love that, Lisa. It really lands for me. Excellent planner, right, everyone? If we need a plan, we know who to turn to. So this is the thing, right, is the bystander cannot wait long enough. The client cannot wait long enough for the bystander to feel safe. The client cannot wait long enough for the bystander to feel safe. They're never going to know everything. May never feel ready. Right? So what do we do? So see how these experiments are specific to each of these protectors, right? If we gave the critic the experiments for the bystander, right, making decisions, taking action, it's not going to change the relationship that we have with that critic pattern, right? Because that pattern is very good at making decisions and taking action. It has tipped into an overexpression of that, right? So we want to experiment with the very specifics of the protector that are coming up. So what I want to do, yeah, I love that, Rowena. I'm often too exhausted from planning to do the thing. Yeah, that's classic bystander. Okay. So this is the thing to kind of know, the way out of this, to transform our relationship with the protector, we need a healthy adult relationship with it. Right? We can't kind of stay in that place and keep doing what we're doing. We need to come back to it with a healthy adult relationship, or be in a healthy adult relationship with it. Right. Is this kind of landing for you guys? You're all sort of seeing what we mean by specific experiments, yeah? Okay, so what I want to do is I want to coach somebody around their protector, and I want us to get a little bit of raw material to play with. So I'm just going to ask you some questions where you're going to be playing a little bit with your protector and your healthy adult self. And then I want to demo kind of how I do this with a client, and we'll do this in breakout groups as well. So hopefully you've all got pen and paper handy. So let's just begin by kind of inviting our protector selves to be here. Okay, so you just make sure you've got kind of both feet on the floor, feel a bit grounded, you're safe in your seat, right? You can breathe. You may want to close your eyes or turn your camera off if that feels safer for you, whatever feels easiest. And I just want you to imagine, right, there is this part of you that is your self-doubt. It's the part that is watching out all the time for risks. It's trying to keep you safe. You might have a really clear vision of it. It might be kind of coming to you as a thing you can kind of hold. It might have shape or form for you, but it might feel quite vague. It's like an idea of something. So just imagine this. This is the part of you that is holding on to your stories, your past hurts, that part that's telling you, don't do that, you might hurt yourself. And I just want you to choose something where your protector is engaged in your world. Right? It could be something in your coaching business, something in your quite personal human life. It could be something to do with your coaching work with clients. But where is your protector showing up? Where is self-doubt emerging for you? And I just want you to ask your protector a couple of questions. What are you worried about right now? What is your protector worried about right now? You may want to write this down. And of the thing that your protector is worried about, what is it that feels uncomfortable for you about this? Where is the discomfort? No matter how irrational it feels or how much you don't wish this was here, like what about it is uncomfortable? And the last question, what do you make this discomfort mean about you? So just thank your protector kind of mentally. And I just want you to read over what you've written. What your protector is worried about, what feels uncomfortable about this for you, and what you make your discomfort mean. as you read this, just ask your healthy adult self, that part of you that has access to self-belief and self-acceptance, self-worth and self-trust, what does that part of you want you to know about this thing? What does your healthy adult self have to say? Just notice if your healthy adult self is saying, you should totally get coached on this right now. Okay, I'm going to ask for a volunteer because I want to show you just how I work with this. Oh, we got two. Sharon, can I take Sharon, Iris, because I think you and I have coached before. Is that okay? Magic, thank you for your generosity. Sharon, can you unmute yourself, please, love? Thank you for volunteering.
That's okay.
So don't panic, I got you. Is basically what I want to let you know. I could see that kind of, oh, I think it's me. So yeah, I'm all here for it. So tell us a little bit about what your protector is worried about.
Oh, all of a sudden worried about money.
Yep. Tell me about that.
Well, I've done a lot of work on this over the years, and I know that the root of my money stuff is this feeling that that I can only have money for a short time, and then it's all gonna disappear. You know, it's all gonna go away. And in my business, it's had, like, after years of building it up, which was hard to begin with, like, I've had a really good period for the last 3 years or so where I just couldn't believe how much money was coming into my business, yeah. You know. But even while this was happening, at the back of my mind was always thinking, yeah, but it's all going to come crashing down any minute. It's like, you know. And then when COVID hit, I was like, okay, this is the thing. There you go. So I told you, it's all going to come crashing down. Here's the thing. And then it did take a little bit, but it survived COVID, you know, pretty well, really.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, it's kind of like it's feeling a lot harder again, and yeah. Money isn't coming in as effortlessly and easily as it was. And so this is now... And I'm like really fighting with myself because I know what to do. I know I mustn't go back into this scarcity mindset. I know that I have to concentrate on feeling abundant and all this blah, 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 blah. I know that. And I know that it works. It has worked. But that is feeling so hard because the little thing in my head's going, oh my God, I know, but I have no money. And like, no, 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 no.
So... I love this is such a juicy one, and I imagine there's a lot of people right now as we hear all of this news about an upcoming recession that mm-hmm. this is really totally it's a shared worry. So I want you to know, A, you're not alone, right? And it's a real thing.
Yeah.
So tell me about this sense that tell me about, like, what is the thing that is sitting with you right now? Like, you've had this belief in the past, money disappears, but what is the thing that is happening for you right now that your protector's kind of telling you?
In terms of what? How I'm experiencing it, do you mean?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. What, in terms of how much that money isn't coming in or my feelings?
Yeah. What's the thing that is really uncomfortable about this situation right now?
Well, it's going against all my... principles of being abundant and all this sort of stuff, because I've had to, you know, I've had like lots of team members. They're not, you know, they're not employed by me, but they're all freelancers. But I, you know, I've had 6 or 7 of them working for me. And I've just had to acknowledge that, you know what, I can't, this is not making sense to be paying all these people every month. And
what about that is uncomfortable?
Well, there are two things. One is uncomfortable because I feel I've failed.
Right.
And two is also the sense of responsibility to other people. You know, I kind of think, you know, this is awful that I'm now withdrawing money from those people as well. So I just feels a bit rubbish, really.
I've failed. I've let people down, my team down.
And also, sorry, this is the biggest thing.
Yep.
I feel that this is a really massive thing. I just feel like a massive fraud.
Right.
Because I'm like, you know, my business is all around on helping people to grow their businesses.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm running a mastermind, and like, I'm thinking all these people in the mastermind are probably earning more money than I am at the moment. And who am I to be there, like, telling them what to do with their businesses? It just feels... Yeah. And so it's really shaking me. I just feel like an absolute fraud.
Yeah.
You know?
Gotcha. So I'm curious to know if this is a pattern for you, right? This sense of if your business goes through the kind of, you know, ups and downs, are you correlating a sense of success with money? And a sense of failure / fraudulence, your words, with less income.
Yeah. And I know I shouldn't do that. I know it's not healthy to attach yourself to what money.
But it is what it is, right?
So
it's let's be with what is. So there's a pattern here, right? That money is a measures my success.
Yeah.
Does that feel true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and you know, of course, it's one of them, right? Like it's a nice, straightforward measure, you know. And we're in business to make money. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
But notice how you're kind of connected that with something more than just your business success, right? Like it seems like it's connected to you as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
what does your healthy adult self have to say about all of this?
I don't know.
Did you create this situation, like the recession, the downturn?
No.
So that's a good healthy belief to have, right?
Yeah.
The recession and kind of macroeconomics, right? Not my responsibility. That's a good healthy belief to have.
Yeah. And the another one would be, you know, I've been here before and I know that.
Yeah.
Like
you would have come through 2008?
No, that was you know, I was employed then, so
right.
But certainly the COVID thing, like 2 years ago. Yeah. So
great example.
Yeah.
I've got through COVID. Yeah.
And it's also telling me that a lot of this is self-inflicted in the sense, not in the sense that I haven't got so much money, but in the sense of how I'm managing my thoughts about it. That's
right.
Like I have no need to feel like this if I've got my act together.
Right.
And, you know, focused on, look, Sharon, you know what happens if you go into a scarcity mindset. You don't have any money. So you go into an abundance mindset. You know, I know all that. And I know the evidence is there that when I do that,
yeah,
the magic happens. So I know how to correct it, but I think I have to just, it's a bit like being on a roller coaster. It's a bit like, yeah, some days you can, yeah, really do that, and then other, yeah, days you're like, oh, I can't do, well, that today. Just so, like, yeah.
So one, know, thing I would offer around that, like a really, yeah, healthy belief around that, is there's something about, like, when you feel in that your abundance mindset, like, what do you believe about yourself and your business when you're in that?
I believe that that what I put out there, I get back totally. You know, so if I go out there and I believe that, you know, that money isn't limited,
yeah,
that there is a plentiful supply and there's always more money and people always find money and I, yeah, blah, 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 then that's what happens. It does. It absolutely does. It always does.
Okay. So what you believe,
mm,
has an impact on what you do, what you say, what you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I believe equals what I feel, what I say, and what I do. Yeah. Yeah. So just notice that, right? You've got this, we've got this kind of above the line stuff that's playing around here, yeah, right? Money disappears, I failed, I've got less income coming in. I'm just gonna move this guy up here. I can't keep paying my team, so I'm managing my costs. Another healthy way of saying that, right?
Yeah.
I'm good at managing costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've got this thing of, you know, money is a measure of my success.
Yeah.
And it feels to me like when you think about that and think about this experience, what kind of protector do you think you're playing with here? What does this have the energy of for you?
Well, it's all around being, it's all about self-worth and being good enough or not, yeah, good enough.
So. Right? So it feels like a critic to me, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I don't know if it does for you, right? That idea of being perfect.
Yeah.
At this,
yeah, right? I should be able, you know, if I'm, yeah, running this, you know, I should be,
yeah,
have this massive business myself, so I should be like this role model, and
yeah,
you know, I, you know,
yeah, right, you've got to be exceptional,
yeah, yeah,
you're, yeah, the person that is taking out,
yeah,
the economic slowdown and the recession, you're the exception to that. Be extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classic. It's a classic protective mechanism, right? Because, yeah, it can feel way safer to imagine that that's who we are. But I think what that robs you of is these amazing resources that you actually do have, right? When you come back to the realness of your business right now, you know, that actually the recession and the macroeconomics are not my responsibility. I got through COVID. When I believe, you know, in the abundance of everything, that impacts what I feel, what I say, what I do. That helps me show up in a different way.
Yeah.
Right? I'm managing my costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of these things are really healthy.
Mm.
This is about being with what's real.
Mm.
And I wonder, like, if you were speaking really compassionately to yourself and able to kind of be in the imperfection of your business, which is always going to be imperfect, right? Like, what would you be saying to yourself right now about this particular situation?
I'm doing the best I can, maybe.
Yeah. I would say doing really, like, you're actually meeting the constraints with your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about folks watching, but when I think about a business mentor, I want someone who can meet the constraints with a healthy adult self. Like, I like, and this is the thing to think about, what do my people expect from me, right? Because they don't probably feel extraordinary either. How could your healthy adult self support them in this situation?
Well, I was just about to say by trying not to be perfect, but that sounds like a bit of a cop-out, really.
What's the middle ground between being imperfect and perfect?
I guess just being real, I guess.
Yeah.
Something I sort of tried to do. I think I know I ran the last session, I talked them through how I was simplifying and streamlining my business, and I did share with them I was getting rid of people. Well, not getting rid of them, that's an awful phrase. I was, you know,
managing costs.
Letting people go, I think, you know, and I did share that with them. And I was really upfront with them, and I showed them a picture of my a woolly mammoth, and I said to them, "What's this?" And they said, "What?" They went, "What? Your business?" And I said, "Yeah, this is exactly my business. This is how it feels. This is how it feels like a big woolly mammoth at the moment. It's got too big. I take my eye off the ball. There's lots of moving parts. I'm not paying attention to these. So I've decided to do something about it." And there's a bit of this is about cost cutting, but it's not all about that. It's about me starting to pay attention to things that I have not been paying attention to.
Beautiful.
And then as I was doing that, I was thinking to myself, "Oh, well, this is massively oversharing. They're probably going, oh my God, what, you know, how am I paying to be in this mastermind when the woman who runs it is telling us her business is crap?" No, but they said that they really appreciated it and they love it when I do stuff like that. So
so I want you to really sit with that, right? Because this feeling of fraudulence is also a protective aspect that's coming from the critic. I have to be perfect, otherwise other people think I'm a fraud. And what you've just described is a really courageous and quite advanced level, like, experiment of sharing what's really going on, which is the opposite of fraudulence. And you've had this feedback that says, "We love it when you do this." So I wonder, like, what do you want to do more of to support yourself right now? Knowing that we can't really know what the outcome's going to be of
something that
is beyond our control, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you want to do more of?
Well, I did note down that experiment, that first experiment that you came up with, because I was, as you were talking, I was like, that is me. So this is about, you know, speaking to yourself with compassion for 24 to 48 hours, because, you know, it's only 11 o'clock and I've literally been probably spoke to myself really badly probably about 6 times an hour since 7 o'clock this morning.
Right. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. So that's a cracking experiment to play with, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I would invite you to do as well, which may feel a little stretchy, so you might want to build up to this, but it's totally up to you, Sharon. But your community have given you this awesome feedback. When you do things like this, it really helps us, or we feel less alone, we feel more resourced, all of that good stuff. I wonder if you could ask them, what do you want, what kinds of things would support you right now? Like, and they might come up with some really gnarly answers that you could then take your time to address.
Hmm.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we create groups and we want to share because we want that sense of belonging and connection. And then we beat ourselves up because we think, oh, I've got to show up not as me, but as this version of me, especially when that critic's involved.
Yeah.
And you've done this really brave thing of showing up as you, and you had this great feedback. So it feels to me like that's a beautiful invitation for you to kind of play on that edge a little bit and see what that feels like. And I think that and supporting your compassion with yourself, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like even looking back over this part of the call and writing down, like, what are all the healthy things I can believe about this current situation?
Mm.
You know? That could really support you.
Yeah.
And the thing about, you know, this idea of abundance, the way I translate that is that the abundance mindset is, I think it's super helpful to really own that this doesn't come from an external magic source. Whatever I believe is how I'm going to feel, is how I'm going to take action. It's what I'm going to say or do or not say or not do. That's going to impact the outcomes of my world.
Mm.
And I just really want you to own that that's coming from you. It's not it's not some kind of magical presence outside of you. Yeah. It's you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are the tool. You are the source.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely get that. I know, and that's what I'm saying. I'm frustrated because I know that because I've done it, practiced in it, but it's just at the moment you just have a little bit of a wobble, and it's like, oh, it's almost like I have to. I was describing it this morning in my group that about how I because you know I'm a massive tennis fan and Rafa fan, and you know, and everything, and I describe it. It's almost like, you know, when Rafa hits a. Doesn't hit a great forehand and he'll like slap himself on his legs or something. It kind of, that's how it kind of feels. It kind of like, look, you know what to do, like slap himself on the legs. He'll come on, you know.
And what's the most compassionate way you can do that for yourself, right? Oh, I've forgotten I can do this.
Yeah.
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 You said a great thing around, I've realized I'm not paying attention to the things that I needed to pay attention to. And now I'm realized I can, right? That's such a compassionate way of looking at it.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing, Sharon. That's great.
Thank you. So I hope I didn't take too much time.
You took up the perfect amount of time. Really, really cool. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, folks, we're probably not going to have time to do the peers work, but I'm going to give you this exercise to take away and play with in your groups, right? So what I was asking there is, I'm going to share the questions with you. Oh, hang on 1 second, sorry. Share, here we go. So, oops. Okay, so these are the questions that I was asking, right? What's the context that we're playing with? How is the self-doubt showing up right now? Is this a pattern, right? Like, does the client recognize it? So we want to ask questions around what's coming up for you, and then, oh, is this connected to past experiences? Have you been here before? Right, for us as the coach, we want to get a sense of, is this a pattern? Is this a kind of pattern of belief, pattern of behavior that the client's experiencing? We want to get a sense of, like, what kind of protector are we dealing with, right? And so if you've already shared this with the client, then you can say, oh, what's showing up for you, right? If they're familiar with that. But it may be that you just have that for yourself at this point, right? Oh, I think this might be a critic. And you can ask some clarifying questions, right? Just to kind of get a sense of, like, yeah, it does this belief or this behavior, right? So the belief for the credit, be perfect, the behavior is overwork, overdo, right? Is that what the flavor you're getting here? Or is it something else? What does the client's healthy adult self have to offer? right? What do they think about what's going on? Sharon's healthy adult self had tons to offer. Notice how when I first asked that, there was like, oh, I'm not sure. Like there was a bit of hesitation. So I can offer something to her. Do you know what I see? Is this. And then sometimes that will just open the floodgates, right? Or I'll say, well, tell me more about what's going on here. And you can kind of paraphrase that back to the client so they can see, oh, actually, I am doing something really awesome here, or really positive, really healthy here, right? And then thinking about with the client, what experiment would help to look at this current context, this current situation that's alive for them, what experiment would help? And, you know, Sharon beautifully came up with speaking to herself in a more compassionate way. She was like really able to kind of own that. And then playing with, oh, what if you also kind of, because Sharon's a coach and has been around the block, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to push you a little bit to play on this edge of vulnerability around the sense of fraudulence. How else could you kind of take this one step further? But one experiment is perfect. One experiment is perfect, right? The only reason I kind of sort of pushed Sharon a little bit is because I think she's totally got this, and I can totally see how this would benefit her and her people, right? So they're the kind of five sort of questions that I ask just to sort of play with this, to bring it to life, give the client something that they can play with for this live issue that they've brought to a session. Questions, comments, feedback? Yes, Fiona.
I feel like sometimes I'm not sure which protector is sort of the predominant one, especially when they seem to be sort of colluding with each other. And I just wondered if there's a sort of straightforward way to get to the bottom of which protector is it.
So they will probably all be there a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, and we could see this like with Sharon's beautiful example here. I've let the team down, right? There's a bit of kind of and the sense of, oh, I don't want my mastermind to think that I'm who I think I am, right? I don't want them to see that part of me. Like there is a bit of overgiving in there, right? That comes from this place of just wanting to protect the people. And so I could have gone in that direction, but my sense was that actually at the heart of it, it's more about Sharon's relationship with this belief, money measures my success. And that for me is kind of classic critic, right?
Right.
So all I would say is, play with this. You kind of can't go wrong, because if you're hearing two, you probably would hear two. They're probably both there, so one or t'other would be a great direction to go in. And what you can say to the client is, it sounds like you're either trying to take care of everybody else, and so there's this belief, I've got to take care of everybody else, and money measures my success, which feels like the most important. Cool. Right? So you can kind of just ask those clarifying questions and get that info from the client and kind of play. You're experimenting too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My sense was the way that Sharon was talking, and just the more attention and energy was going into the money stuff. So it's like, okay, I'm going to follow that energy. Yeah.
Thanks.
Does it help?
Yeah, it does. Thanks.
Cool. Other questions from folks? Yeah, Iris.
I just wanted to say something about what Fiona just said. So just in case it's helpful, because I realized that when you shared about how you differentiate between them, I was just thinking that at least for the critic and the scapegoat, which are kind of opposites, right? One is super over functioning and one is under functioning. I kind of thought of my clients, and the first time they get homework, like when they come back and they're over functioning and they've knocked it out of the park, maybe that's a critic the first hint of a critic, if nothing else, if I don't have any other data, let's say, about how they talk to themselves. And then if they come back and it was all too much and nothing happened and it was just too hard and they always do this and it's all awful, then maybe that's a scapegoat. So I know there's more than those two, but that was kind of what I was thinking for myself, almost like a note in my client notes, like, look for those two things, like, to start getting an idea, because they're quite different and I'm guessing they need quite different coaching. Yeah.
That's a great point, Iris. And a reminder, right, that it's not about making it, you know, making perfect progress with the experiment. It's all about what's the client's experience of it. So yeah, excellent point. Yeah. Whatever happens, you're going to get more information as you get to know your client.
Yeah.
And I would say as well, like, sometimes what I'll say to a client as I'm getting to know them is, oh, I'm noticing that we're getting lots of beliefs coming up that kind of fit with this pattern. And I'll just take them through the four different types and or give it to them to read or something like that. And, you know, get them to be engaged in this. It's like, oh, what feels true for you? Like, all we're doing here is trying to say, get to know yourself more. That's how you expand your self-concept. We're going to see all the ways that, you know, you're getting in your own way, or the beliefs of and the protective behaviors are kind of halting you from achieving what you want. So we can work on those, but mostly you're leading it. You know, your dear client, you know what you want more than I ever will. So just tell me where we're at and we can support you to get where you need to go. Beautiful. Nice, Iris, thank you. Anyone else want to share anything? It's coming up. All good? So what I would, oh yeah, Nicola, go ahead.
This is just super quick, but yeah. when you hear the thin stories and the real cognitive distortions, do you often, like I had, again, conversation with Jo, and when I was in, when she caught it, and she said, what else could be true? And in real time, like that kind of blew my mind. And I'm just curious, like, because do you find that that's one of your go-to tools? Because often it's almost like, are you doing a little psychoeducation? Like, this is what's happening. And that's a generalization. Or is that like, yes, that's exactly when it often will be most brilliant, that it takes their brain out of that simple loop?
It depends.
Okay. Fair enough.
It depends. Both and one or t'other, right? So, and I think this is the thing is, one of the things, so I'll just give you a tiny bit of context here around my answer, is coaching, I think, is a form of improv in that we are improvising all the time. If you've ever participated in an improv group, which I did for 6 weeks one summer, it was freaking awesome and I totally recommend it. It's like a great, you're just responding in the moment to what the person brings. And sometimes for one client, you're going to offer something, and for another client, you're going to offer another thing. But I think staying present in your healthy self is always going to follow the energy that the client brings, right? And so sometimes we counteract like our client's energy as well, right? Like, so they might show up full of big energy and be like talkative and very kind of, you know, expansive and what have you one day, and we'll be like, oh, okay, that's making me feel like I want to come back a little bit, right? I want to bend away from that, or I want to bend towards it, depending on how we're feeling. But it's like you're just trusting yourself and your responses. When you're in your healthy self, when you're like, okay, I'm good, I'm whatever's coming at me, I'm here for it, then it kind of doesn't matter what the client brings, because you're going to be responding in an intuitive way that is often quite hard to describe. Right, when you have to go back and think, what did I do there? I don't even remember. Right. Yeah.
No, that resonates. Thank you, Sass.
You're so welcome. So folks, what I'd really encourage you to do is is to do that pairs work in your practice pods, where you're kind of asking those questions, playing with it. Just do that a couple of times with your pod or with other folks in the program, as you're just playing with this. And it's going to take no time at all before you're like, right, I'm doing this with a client. I'm going to bring this into a client session. And what I have found is that, particularly for clients who have a forming self-concept, they love to kind of go, oh, what box am I in? Right? Like, tell me the answer kind of thing. And for those people who have a formed self-concept, it's like, yeah, that's totally me. That's not me. Right. So you kind of can't lose with these, with wherever someone's at. Like, most people will be like, oh, I recognize myself in that, or I need you to tell me what I am. But there's a way of saying, this is a known pattern. That might mean that I'm not cursed. Right. That might mean that I'm not crazy. Right. And that can be hugely reassuring for a client. And then when you say, hey, and there's a path through this too, which is probably going to feel a bit uncomfortable and crunchy and shit for a bit, but it will be all right. Right. Like, this is the way through it. And you're explaining why. And it's, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. Awesome. Nice work, folks. So enjoy your integration week. I'll see you back in a couple of weeks here. Questions very welcome on the discussion forum. Please feel free to take full advantage of that. And Scott will be having a session this Thursday, but not next week, right? So there's no study group next week. Okay. One of my clients found the mere existence of a quiz validating that she's not alone. That's so great. That's so great. Love it. Okay, loves, take care of yourselves, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. All right. Nice work. Thanks, Sharon. Cheers. Bye. Bye.